If I know there's a boat with $200 million on it, I will go there. Yeah? I am investigating. Don't make your story what is not true, otherwise I will never talk to you again. What I find, I will tell you. But don't anybody tell me that Lambton boat's on that reef. Don't put words in people's mouths. Yeah? Let me get the story straight.
Mike Hatcher arouses keen interest wherever he goes, because he's one of the most successful treasure hunters in the world. And this is the port of Sihanoukville, Cambodia. For 25 years, Cambodia has been ravaged by civil war, a virtual no-go area for Westerners. But now peace is returning, and it's opening itself up to the outside world. Mike Hatcher's presence here is part of this new openness. He's hoping to achieve the biggest find of his career in the seas off Cambodia. He is about to sail for a remote reef, some 40 miles out into the Gulf of Thailand, Condor Reef.
They can have them all the time. It's just, if you could pick up. Yeah.
The armed guard is to help ward off any marauding pirates.
Yeah. Just for safety.
Oliver, this one
to here.
Mike Hatcher was born in Yorkshire and brought up in a Dr. Barnardo's orphanage. He was sent to Australia as a teenage farm worker. 25 years ago, he drifted into the marine salvage business. And since then, he's found and salvaged more treasure ships than any other man alive today.
Cool. What a circus. At the moment, we're in the claw of the dragon, and if you get out too easy, you're going to get it really hard when you get out there. So let's hope it turns the other way, huh?
Mike Hatcher became famous just over 10 years ago when he discovered a vast cargo of Chinese porcelain in a sunken Dutch East India Company flagship, the Gelda Meissen, wrecked on a reef just south of Singapore. The find, called the Nanking Cargo, was sold for £12 million in 1985. Hatcher is hoping to repeat the experience in Cambodia. He's negotiated an exclusive 5-year contract with the Cambodian government to explore their entire coastline. As the Sihanoukville fishing fleet heads out into Kompong Som Bay, Mike Hatcher's flotilla heads out to fish for sunken treasure. It's typical of Mike Hatcher to hire a seagoing junk for his expedition. It may be identical to the treasure ship he is hunting.
We're steaming, I think, to the most dangerous reef in the Gulf of Thailand, Condor Reef. We have led to believe that there is maybe one of the best wrecks in the whole of Southeast Asia, with a precious cargo of fine Chinese and Japanese porcelain and also some bullion. That's our target.
This quest for a treasure ship off the Cambodian coast started many thousands of miles away in the heart of the city of London. Nigel Pickford is a wreck detective, one of the sharpest in the business. He travels around the world, often in considerable secrecy, searching through the archives of ships and the sea. Building up a coherent picture of what happened to this ship or to that cargo. No detail is too small. A single chance comment in a logbook or a letter can ignite the trail that leads to another treasure ship. That is precisely what happened in the case of the wreck off the Cambodian coast.
I was actually researching a different shipwreck, and in the process of doing that, I was reading this book, Porcelain and the Dutch East India Company, by a Dutch historian. There's the entry here for February the 16th, 1680, which caught my attention. And it mentions the loss of an English ship, apparently called the Lantham, somewhere on the coast of Cambodia. But what I found exciting about it was that this ship was carrying porcelain. High quality Chinese porcelain of this period is potentially very valuable. In many ways, a cargo of porcelain is more exciting to me than a cargo of gold bullion.
That intriguing snippet of information drove him to the archive of the English East India Company in Waterloo to look for more clues. There are over 15 kilometres of shelving bearing the records of 300 years of trade between Britain and India and the kingdoms of Southeast Asia. It's all recorded in immense detail. The ships, the captains, cargoes, the shipwrecks. But would it contain any mention of the Lantham? Many hours of searching yielded nothing. The Lantham simply didn't appear. So he came to the conclusion that it couldn't have been a ship of the East India Company. It must have been a rogue trader.
The company called these private traders interlopers because they were trading illegally, breaking their monopoly. Trouble with interlopers, from my point of view, is it's very difficult to trace any details about them, almost impossible. And so the trail had dried up almost as soon as it had started. I got nowhere. I filed the Lantham and forgot all about it.
Mike Hatcher became interested in the salvage prospects of the Cambodian coastline long before Nigel Pickford's discovery. It all started in 1975 with a very interesting piece of gossip.
I'd say the first time I heard about Condor Reef was some friends of mine during the evacuation of Vietnam stopped one evening to do some fishing, and they told me that they looked down and could see the outline of a wreck.
In those days, the whole of Indochina was a war zone. Mounting a peaceful diving expedition was unthinkable.
I think in 1975, the last place one thought of going would be Condor Reef. I think at that time, the Cambodians had tried to take a US freighter, I think we all heard about. There was many helicopters shot down, and so Cambodia locked the door, I think, really, on what is the best target in Asia.
Up to a few years ago, he'd assumed that the best target in Southeast Asia was a German steamship, the Condor. It had given its name to the reef when it sank on it in 1862 while carrying a huge cargo of gold bullion. He contacted Nigel Pickford and asked him to check it out. Nigel Pickford went off to the Lloyd shipping records housed in the old Guild Hall. These records go back to the 1670s. They list shipwrecks from all over the world.
The rock the Condor hit hadn't previously been laid down in the charts, But it was now, for the first time, as can be seen from this French chart of 1862. Here it is, called Condor Reef, with the word shipwreck marked underneath. The entry in the loss book, however, for Friday the 13th of April, made it clear that the crew and the specie, that's the gold coin, were both saved. I passed the disappointing news about the gold back to Mike. He wasn't too pleased to hear about it, I must say.
Nigel Pickford then recalled the Cambodian shipwreck of 1680. He went to The Hague in Holland to see if he could pick up the trail of the lanthanum in the archives of the Dutch East India Company. Volker's porcelain book had mentioned a letter that had been written by a commercial spy in Malacca to the Dutch East India Company's headquarters in Batavia, describing the arrival of the Lantham's rescued crew. For 300 years, the company had been a colonial power, and the meticulous records of its vast amount of maritime trade are held in this huge collection of handwritten volumes. Locating the key letter would be akin to finding the proverbial needle in the haystack. To make matters worse, the records aren't properly indexed, and they're all written in Old Dutch. Eventually, he tracked it down and got a huge surprise.
There never was a ship called Lantham. That was the name of the captain, Ralph Lampton. L-A-M-P-T-O-N. But the remarkable thing about this letter was it gave a very precise position of loss. It refers to a rock exactly 6 miles north of a tiny island called Pulo Way. So, we now not only had a wreck, we also had a place on the chart to look for.
Was it possible that the island Pulo Way would show up on the old 17th century Dutch charts of the Cambodian coast?
When I first saw it, I could hardly believe my eyes, because here, right in the centre, was the island I was looking for, Pulo Way, clearly marked. And here, exactly 6 miles north of it, was a rock called Prussian Drochter. Prussian probably means deep blue, Prussian blue. Drochter refers to the fact that it dries out at low tide, making it very dangerous to shipping.
Nigel Pickford was convinced he'd identified the ship and the reef on which it had been wrecked. But nothing is that straightforward in treasure hunting, and his natural caution drove him back to the British Museum to check the old charts against the modern Admiralty ones. It blew his whole story wide open. They simply didn't agree with each other.
You come to the island Pulo Way. You go 6 old Dutch miles north of it, and you do indeed come to a rock. On this modern chart, it's called Elot Ver. But it's not a sunken rock. Remember, Ralph Lampton described it as a blind clip or sunken rock. But this is a soaring pinnacle that sticks out 120 feet. Couldn't possibly be the same thing. And nowhere is there any mention of Prussian Drochter, the rock that dries.
It seemed that he was right back to square one. He didn't have a target after all.
I went back to the old charts here in The Hague and started again from scratch. Here was Pulo Way. Here was another island called Koh Tang. And here, well to the north of it, at the apex of the triangle, was Prussian Drochter. I compared that with a modern chart. Here again was Pulo Way. Here was Koh Tang. And if you made the same shape, created the same triangle, you came to the rock called the Condor Reef. I came to the conclusion that the Condor Reef had to be the same as the old rock, Prussian Drochter.
Mike Hatcher is only sailing to Condor Reef because Nigel Pickford's research concludes that this is the rock Ralph Lampton hit in 1680. He's staking everything on Pickford's reputation for getting it right.
A little bit like a family of
everybody would know.
the similarities between Hatcher's current adventure and the Nanking cargo are quite extraordinary. Back then, he found a 19th century ship, the Stellingworth, which had given its name to the reef. But it led him on to finding a 350-year-old junk laden with valuable Ming china and the Gelder Meissen herself, containing the vast Nanking hoard. Now, the 19th century Condor may be leading him to the ultimate prize of his career, Lambton's boat.
If we look at it from a purely monetary basis, I think the junk, total at auction, £3.5 million. Then we go to the Gelder Meissen at 12. Then we look at Lambton's, the possibility of 150,000 pieces of fine porcelain, porcelain that's missing. It is going to be keenly sought after. I don't think there's another example of a wreck like this around. So the bottom line, I think she's bigger than both put together.
A March sunset finds Mike Hatcher ploughing slowly across the Bay of Kompong Som. He's backing Nigel Pickford's analysis to the tune of a hired Chinese junk, a crew of divers, and some advanced search technology. And he's keeping an open diary for the next few months.
The plan now is when we arrive tomorrow morning will be to find out how many wrecks are there, what the problems are, and then we're going to come back with a very large salvage vessel and pick it all up. And I think you're looking, you won't get much change of 1.2 million US in the gamble.
They're not in any hurry. They don't want to stumble onto Condor Reef under cover of darkness.
If there is something wrong with the GPS, if we are going there, getting there earlier, and if for some reason we hear boom, that would be something.
Alain, the junk's captain, comes from Saigon.
You will walk home?
I think I would swim, yes.
No. Even you will walk? With some lead to help you.
John Dyson is the skipper of the dive boat.
So in other words,
also on the team are two Indonesians, Rahim and Suleiman, really with whom Mike has salvaged for years, and two French divers.
Is this correct?
Well, no, I think I got the message from Freddy quite a while ago.
Okay, so tomorrow we survey before you anchor. Then we'll do a GPS chart of the whole reef. Then we'll put divers down to swim the drop-off. And then we'll maggie the top of the reef. Just magnetometer, no side scan. Any anomalies, we'll swim it. And we hope within 2 days we can get rid of what we find on the reef.
The government and the river is
mine.
Yeah.
Even if Lambton's boat was wrecked on Condor Reef, will the treasure still be in it? There has to be a nasty possibility that Lambton returned to salvage his wreck while it was still stranded high on the reef in only a few feet of water. Indeed, the original letter of the 16th of February 1680 mentioned that Lambton had returned to Siam to organize a salvage attempt. If he'd succeeded, then one more treasure trail would fizzle out. Nigel Pickford sifted through all the Dutch East India Company diaries from the 16th of February onwards. Eventually, he chanced upon an extraordinary entry for the 17th of November, 1680. It said that Lambton had indeed gone back to the reef, but had failed to recover anything. It did indeed look as if Lambton's boat had never been salvaged. Dawn the next day, the junk is anchored only 200 meters from Condor Reef. Mike Hatcher can't wait to get to grips with it. This is where the second vessel, appropriately named the Condor, comes into its own. Its light, flat-bottomed hull is ideal for skating over the top of the reef.
the reef ahead. Something's got a buoy on it for us.
Look at them here. Here's the shallow spot. Here.
How much here, John?
There's a big problem here.
9.6 metres.
It's not 9.6. Keep to your right. Hey, Raheem, drop a boy here. Drop. Okay, John. Pardon? What's down there?
The reef seems to run almost due east-west, and as they drop the marker buoys, they estimate that it's about 400 metres long and less than 100 metres wide. Nowhere does it break the surface.
Holy shit, mate. Nasty bastard, isn't it?
Ooh. I think quite a lot of the wrecks would have hit this and just dropped straight down the drop-off. Because I reckon you've just got a solid wall of rock that they would have hit on, they would have split, and they would have either bounced across that way, or when the wind changed, it would have taken them back that way. Especially like with Lambton's boat, because they couldn't even take off the papers.
Is that your computer?
This is my, yeah, this
is yeah, the best way is just to dive it.
Nice then?
Ah, oh, just glorious!
Condor Reef is a mariner's nightmare, a solid slab of granite that rears up almost vertically from the seabed 30 metres below. The fear is that Lambton's ship might have hit the reef, stuck fast and broken up, scattering its precious cargo in fragments across the reef. But there seems little sign of that. They know that Lambton was sailing south at the time of his accident and may have hit the reef at its northern edge. So they're working their way over the reef to the northern side, looking for telltale signs of impact. These pots may look quite pretty, but they're contemporary Thai stoneware and not worth saving. Condor Reef has been claiming victims right up to the present day. This is much more interesting, a fragment of blue and white Chinese porcelain. It looks like the base of a teacup. You can just see a basket of flowers motif. Even a single fragment is a vital clue. It means that at some time in the past, a ship has hit the reef and must lie around here somewhere, hopefully with the bulk of its cargo still intact. They're now towards the northern edge of the reef, and they find a large 17th century style anchor. This is a metal ingot. The old trading boats used these, laid close to the keel, as cargo and ballast. They would be spilled onto the reef as the ship ripped out her keel on impact.
Ingots. Porcelain.
Big one.
Markings the same? Nothing.
Looks like Chinese, looks like Japanese.
Looks like Chinese?
Japanese.
Japanese. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
And followed a trail of 10,
you think you might have gone over?
10 ingots. Then why would we find porcelain down in the deep stuff, just drifted down?
If you're not, it's more too.
So that's where we found.
The first one is where?
Over there.
Yeah.
So maybe if you come across, there's a shallow spot in here. Bump, bump, bump. Started dumping his gallons.
I think somehow we've got him, Rahim. And he's not very far away.
Are over there, though.
Casual guess.
Minga.
I guess it's Ming. A mix, not a Minga.
I reckon it's Minga.
Yeah, dead, that'd be Minga.
And it's,
but the there's a little
pretty good stuff there. What have you got? Ivory. Yeah, yeah. Elephant tusk.
Ivory.
Yeah, definitely. Lambton's boat was not carrying ivory.
Sorry?
Lambton's boat was not carrying ivory.
Yep.
So,
it's another
one.
No, definitely.
Wonderful.
Now, see?
According to Nigel Pickford's research, the tin ingots that Lambton was carrying weighed over 100 weight. This is much too light. This small ingot may also be evidence of yet another ancient wreck. The evidence they collected so far was beginning to point to a series of ships hitting the reef at different times and from different directions. Condor Reef was turning out to be a genuine ship's graveyard. As the dives continue, the porcelain collection builds up. It's certainly old and mostly Chinese blue and white. But Hatcher doesn't have the expertise to date it accurately. It will have to be sent to Christie's in London for that. But even this cursory examination reveals a wide range of age. Further evidence, there's more than one wreck around the reef. Hatcher has found no evidence of a wreck on top of the reef. It may be lying nearby in deeper water. To find it, he has to turn to his newest piece of high technology, a side-scan sonar. Suleiman prepares to launch the sonar equipment. The technology is mounted laterally on this long torpedo. Its stabilizing fins allow it to run smoothly through the water as it's towed along behind the boat at about 2 knots. Using his navigational computer, John Dyson aims to steer a series of courses around the reef. Suleiman needs to get the torpedo close to the bottom to give the sonar the widest field of view, without actually touching it and risking damage. On the computer screen, the vertical line towards the left represents the track of the torpedo. The black area on either side is the part of the seabed that the sonar cannot see. The yellowish column is the continuous trace of the seabed to the right of the torpedo out to a range of 60 meters. Here, the smooth contours of the sandy bottom are broken up by little outcrops of rock. After 300 years on the seabed, no clear outline of a wreck could possibly exist. It will have become completely covered by sand. All Mike Hatcher hopes to pick out is a suspiciously elongated narrow mound. He's seen something interesting.
It looks as though it's something that's not natural. You know, it looks like something. You've got a really good flat bottom and just this, the right size and the right shape.
Rahim and Olivier get ready to dive.
He's fucking off.
Now the waiting game begins. Mike Hatcher knows only too well that this repetitive sequence of scan and dive can last for months before a discovery is made. This is just the beginning. He spent 8 weary weeks looking for the Gelder Meissen.
Nice lot of rock, Ryan.
Yeah. Good size of a rock to be a wreck.
Huh?
Just a good size to be a rock, to be a wreck.
Yeah? Yeah. What did you get there?
On the sand.
On the sand.
It's metal, huh? Steel.
It's disappointing. The wreck turns out to be a rock, and Olivier's piece of metal is worthless junk.
It's off a lantern. Off a lantern?
No, it was just a...
Yeah, but I think it's off a lantern.
Off a lantern?
Yeah. The fisherman?
Yeah.
Or,
Any fish there, Ryan?
What is that he's throwing? He's getting
squid. The Gulf of Thailand is notorious for piracy. These fishermen look friendly, but in these waters, smiling fishermen can suddenly sprout machine guns when they close in on your boat. Mike Hatcher has learned the hard way not to trust anyone. 4 years ago, he was in this same gulf salvaging porcelain when he found himself surrounded.
We had about 13,000 pieces of, I would say, Thai, Chinese, Cambodian, Vietnamese ceramics on board. I'd say it was a trading vessel, Chinese trading vessel. And one morning we woke up more or less to find that we were totally surrounded with the Thai Navy. Their entire fleet, I heard later. And they said we were in their economic zone. And when I took out a pair of dividers and showed them the chart, they actually had claimed all of Cambodia waters and most of Vietnam. They waited till dusk. Then they sent in this commando rubber duck full of about 15 ninjas dressed and with all Uzi machine guns, and they must have had it planned out pretty well because they stormed the bridge to take over the communications. But we had a telex already in the machine. We just had to press the button. It went up to the EMASAT. Norway picked it up, and then the world knew. And if that hadn't happened, they would have taken us in dead or alive.
Mike Hatcher is working his way steadily away from the reef with the side scan sonar. Stricken vessels can often take a long time to sink, and Lampton's boat may be anything up to 5 miles off the reef.
Track in, John. Sorry, track in.
They need good weather and a calm sea, but the weather is turning nasty, and the computer is acting up.
Just on circles around the reef again.
Yeah.
Tempers begin to fray.
Are we back where we should be?
Yeah, pretty much so. We're about 50 metres off our last circle.
That's a good picture, isn't it? Can we just leave it alone?
Yes,
just
good.
Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Just okay, off, leave it. I don't want to experiment. Yeah. 20,000, 30,000 a month. I can't have experiments. I've always thrown the thing over the side.
May have to search 100 square miles of sea before he locates the wreck. The condor is going up and down the block like a lawnmower. They actually call it mowing the lawn. The weather steadily gets worse. It's becoming impossible to hold line and speed in the wind and rain. If there is a wreck below them, they're in grave danger of missing it. It's all turning into something of a waste of time.
I think we've confirmed that neither condor lambton is on the reef. They're off the reef, and so it's going to be a matter now of sweeping the lawn and just slowly wearing it down. But they are there. I think there's more than we ever considered were there. And it's just a matter of time before we wear it down. I think Lambton hit this reef because he said it was an isolated rock. And this is really the only isolated rock on the Cambodian coast. So it's there. It's just a matter of how far it bounced. I think it was built in Thailand. Maybe controlled out of there, and she'll be a vessel a little bit bigger than this vessel we're on now, but on similar style.
You mean built in a sort of junk style?
Yep, I honestly believe that, yeah.
The next day, the rain has cleared, but the sea is very rough.
What do you do on a day like this? Hope it doesn't get any worse.
What are you doing?
Dive, we hope. If it gets any worse, well, I think it'll break.
It's nice under the water.
It'll be nice under the water. That'll be the best thing. Jono, are you going to bring me a long rope from up top and just pass him down to me?
It's impossible to bring the condor alongside the junk. They have to swim for it. They're getting very close to the boundary between determination and danger. Under the water, all is calm, but there's still a lot to be done. They need clearer evidence to support Mike's theory that a number of vessels have hit the reef and bounced and jarred their way over before coming to rest in deeper water. Heavy objects would have been shed first by stricken vessels. Can they find them? his experienced eye has spotted a cannon, heavily encrusted in coral. There's something else to the right. This large anchor is certainly over 4 feet wide and over 9 feet long in the stock. But even this may be too small for Lampton's boat. Eventually, they located no less than 7 cannon of different sizes and ages, and 9 different centuries-old anchors. And everywhere, there were tin ingots that had spilled out from hulls that had been ripped open by the reef. These copper nails originally pinned the ship's timbers together. It's time to go. Mike ties a marker buoy to one of the cannon before leaving for the surface. They've abandoned the survey only just in time. The Condor is at its limit, and there's only one way back to the junk.
Whoa. I don't want to do that again. But too dangerous. Too dodgy.
What would happen if a 600-ton sailing ship hit that Condor reef in weather like this?
Well, I believe she'd hit it, she'd spin on her axis, she'd tear a huge hole out of her, and then the waves, as it's lifting us here, you can see, it would lift it just as easily and pound her straight off into deeper water. But if she was belting, trying to get to the south, and she was on attack when she hit it, she would definitely fall off. If she was coming, if the wind was straight behind her and she was running, I still think in this, it would still make its way through and drop off.
Alan, the skipper, is worried that they'll sever their mooring in the mounting seas, and Condor Reef is too close for comfort.
It's unusual for this time of the year, this. Huh?
So we have to keep the position and...
Well, the other thing we could do is run.
To Thailand.
That's Thailand.
It's not very far away.
There can only be one sensible decision. Get underway and run for the shelter of the Cambodian coast.
The Dragon has still got us well and truly by the shorts, I'd say. It's impossible to work in the weather that we're getting without really getting someone seriously hurt, and to the fact even someone killed, you know. The other thing is to manoeuvre this boat round a reef in this weather and survey is an impossibility. You've got one engine, so if that engine cranked out, stopped, we would be the next victim. And then what have we got to get back in? The Condor.
We're in Cambodia. We're not off the coast of Brighton.
The survey of the Condor Reef is finished. We've got tin, porcelain, copper nails, we've got cannon, we've got anchors, but we've got no vessel. So we'll be back, and when we come back, we'll find them.
In the meantime, it gave Mike Hatcher the opportunity to send his porcelain samples to Christie's expert, Colin Sheaf, to see if they could have been part of Lambton's cargo.
I think the Condor Reef has really produced some very interesting porcelain here. Most of it is blue and white of the pieces we've found so far, which I'd expected. Blue and white porcelain is the great export porcelain. It's all 17th century porcelain, but among the interesting bits, I think this is particularly significant, this little shard here, because it's part of a saucer dish. And if you look inside it, you can see there's a double ring inside the foot where it stood, this rather large saucer dish, heavily potted, probably made in 1640 or 1650, which suggests to me that we are at least looking at one boat of that sort of period. However, there are also other interesting early pieces, like this little shard here, which is an important piece, because it's the only one so far which has a significant date on the bottom. This date actually reads Da Ming Nianjie, Great Ming period made. Now, the Ming dynasty finished in 1644, and which therefore clearly dates this piece to before that date, well before Ralph Lanton's ship sank on the Condor Reef. And again, as another example of these perhaps early 17th century pieces, a most unusual little cup, because it's manufactured in a technique called anhoir, concealed decoration, which normally associates with a date late in the 16th century or early in the 17th century, but not at all as late as 1679. The design is actually two dragons. Here you can see one of the heads, and they're both, as one expects on wares like this, pursuing the sacred pearl, the pearl of Buddhist enlightenment. There's a second dragon with its head there and the pearl in front of it, carved right around the outside of the bowl. I think it's very likely there's at least two boats, judging from these small group of fragments here. I don't think we're dealing with just one boat. I think the styles of decoration are too disparate. What we know about this sort of export porcelain suggests to me a boat of perhaps the 1620s or 30s and a boat of perhaps the 1640s or 50s, or slightly later. And I think, therefore, even at this stage, we can say there's certainly more than one boat on the Condor Reef that Mike's looking at. Keep hunting, Mike. I think you made a great start, and I think you're going to find some very interesting objects if you continue the hunt.
We will definitely find something which I think will be very exciting down there. The problem of finding Mr. Lambton's ship will probably be establishing which among the many wrecks that we find along this reef was his. It's a sort of embarrassment of riches situation is what I envisage. But I think we've got a very good chance of finding it.
Mike Hatcher went back to Condor Reef. It's now clear that it's one of the richest ship's graveyards in the world, with several 17th century wrecks lying on the seabed around it. And if anyone can find them, he can.